Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
You can either adopt this mindset of, oh my gosh, you know, the sky is falling. We're going to go into a recession. You know, I'm going to let all my people go. Or you can get out there even more. You know, there's good times and bad times. It all depends on what you're going to do with it and how you're going to manage it.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. My guest today is my friend, Joel Slenning. Joel has already appeared on the podcast. Last time was about 18 months ago. And so his second appearance is long overdue. The last time was episode 53, How to Scale Your Staffing and Recruiting Firm to $16 million. I would highly recommend you go back and listen to that interview. It was one of our most popular episodes. So Joel is the president of Innova People, a healthcare and IT staffing agency based in Oregon. And prior to that, Joel was the founder and CEO of Icon Medical Network, a locum tenens provider, which he scaled to $16 million before selling it, that business in 2019. Joel and I actually run a coaching program together called Apex, which is essentially it's a mastermind group for owners of seven-figure recruiting firms who want to scale to eight figures and build a business that runs without them that they could potentially sell one day if they wanted to. And we'll talk more about that in a bit. Joel, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's good to see you. It is kind of interesting that it was 18 months ago that we sort of met and kicked this off.
I know. It's crazy. That has just gone so fast.
Yeah.
So look, last time we spent most of the call talking about Icon Medical, which is the company that you grew and then sold. And but you're doing really exciting things at Innova People. So this time I'd like to spend more time on your current company. When did you launch that business, Joel?
So I really got started, you know, the sale was completed of Icon in 2019, early first quarter. I think it finally finished, or maybe it was mid second quarter. Really got to work on Innova People in the fourth quarter of 2019. And, you know, just decided that I really wanted to do this again, and but do it differently. And, you know, you obviously, I as you know, I learned a tremendous amount during the Icon days, and, you know, probably made every mistake in the book. And so I want to do it again and maybe make less mistakes this time around.
Makes sense. That sounds good.
Yeah.
So you're coming up for your third anniversary then.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Awesome. And so what do you feel like you've achieved so far with Innova People?
I think probably the biggest thing was, you know, Icon was a very specific model of delivery, and it was much more of a 360 desk style model, where but yet because the marketplace in locum tenens was very there was a lot of people involved in a placement of a physician. Our competition had multiple people involved and multiple people touching the client, where at Icon we wanted to have a single point of contact, so the client got to know one person. So I built a delivery model around that idea that there was sort of a super producer that was managing everything, but behind the scenes, it was going to take a team collaborating in order to be able to deliver the placement and then manage the physician during their tenure. But it really was kind of based on a 360 model. So with Inova People, I didn't want to do the 360 desk model. I don't think that that is I know people can be very successful at it, but I don't think it's a very scalable model. So,
can I just pause there? Why do you say that, Joel?
I think that the biggest thing that I think is where it breaks down is it does take a highly, highly talented person to have the ability to be a good recruiter and a good business development person and a good account manager all in one. They're out there for sure. That's how I started and built, you know, became a million-dollar producer in this business. But I'm not just saying that to compliment myself. I just think that it was as I watched other people struggle with all three responsibilities, it became very apparent to me that I was good at one of them and would struggle at the other two. So I was very good at business development and probably next in line account management, and where my weakness was recruiting. And so I thought that, you know, why not try to build out a model that played to my strengths instead of trying to sort of struggle through the my weaknesses and give my weaknesses to other people to do well at.
It's really interesting. I was a 360 degree recruiter as well. And at that stage, I'd never even heard of any, I didn't know there was any other way to do this. Right.
Yeah.
And I was definitely not good at everything. It's funny because I also was good at business development and not as good at recruiting. And I wasn't even good at account managing, really. I was only good at business development, but I had to do everything and I did okay. But I'm sure I didn't hit my full potential. If there had been, you know, more of a collaborative effort, I think I could have done even better. So how have you taken that approach differently in Inova People then?
Yeah. So I, you know, sat down during the kind of downtime of between Icon and Inova People and designed I don't think I created something new per se, but I decided how I wanted to build Inova People. And that was, I wanted the delivery model and the delivery team to be in full collaboration with business development. So basically side by side, and then create a bucket below them that was the support group, whether it was technology or, you know, outsourced recruiting or, you know, sourcing and, you know, tools that could support everyone's individual, what their responsibilities were between the two buckets. So Luke was quite a bit different than Icon, because I wanted the business development people not to become account managers. I wanted delivery to actually manage the account as well as manage the flow of candidates up into the positions. So I created what I call talent acquisition leader, which is the top of the delivery pool, you know, and sales development reps on the business development side. And what they do, what's done differently is that you have a BD person who connects with an account and ends up, you know, signing, you know, contract and getting a job order or multiple job orders. Once that's done, they actually set a meet. Once the job has been identified and it's done, that goes to delivery. Delivery builds a list of potential candidates, and then business development brings delivery in to a meeting with the manager and goes through the candidates and says, you know, who would you like us to recruit? Like what fits, and kind of build a profile of the person that they're looking for. And then they go out and delivery sends that down to recruitment, and recruitment starts to recruit those people to deliver to the hiring manager using the tools in the sourcing bucket and the other tools that are available, you know, to help continue to drive the candidate flow, because I wanted to be able to build a model that was constantly recruiting. It never stopped recruiting. It was always recruiting. So I brought in a lot of automation into Inova to do email sequencing and consistent outreach to the candidate. Because I thought that there was a couple of things too that I felt like needed to happen. Number one, we needed to be able to go to market and perform faster than the competition, but not lose the accuracy. I think there's a lot of agencies out there that throw a lot of resumes at the wall. I wanted to be able to tell a client, you'll see no more than three candidates from us, and you'll hire one, which I think has been going on for decades, right? But I wanted to truly deliver on that. But in order to be able to do that, you really do have to constantly be recruiting. And so I wanted, 8 to 10 hours a day of recruitment happening. And that's impossible in a 360 model. I mean, that's mm-hmm. they just can't do it. And so that's the big difference between Icon and Innova. Innova is a little bit more of a machine, there's a lot of automation in Innova, whether it's in the BD side and in providing leads to the BD people, or sequencing and outreach in recruitment for the sourcing team and the recruiters on BD. So it's very different.
This is fascinating, Joel. And I'd love to dig a little more into that. Can I just clarify first the model to make sure I understand it correctly? Because it sounds a little bit like almost how software companies are structured. Like you have your SDR, sales development rep, and then, they're the ones who are, bringing in the new clients. And then there's a sort of handover transition to the, customer success team, who then, helps the client to, it's different with software because they're helping people to be able to implement and get results with that software. But where the similarity is, I guess, is you described it as being a machine. It's a bit like an assembly line. You have mm-hmm. people specializing in a specific part of the process, and they work in as a team, so that each person is dedicated 100% to that aspect of, what they do. And they, as you said, like they can do it full time. They're doing, the person who's doing business development is doing that 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. The person who's doing, the delivery is doing that 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So they can really, A, they can get really, really good at it. Mm-hmm. And B, they're not switch tasking. So they're not flipping back and forth between, oh, I need to do some business development now. Oh, okay, now I need to go and I need to deliver because we're behind with that short list. And switching back and forth is what, and the sort of, some people are super, like they're excellent at planning mm-hmm. and they're very disciplined and they can juggle all that stuff. But most people lose a lot of efficiency by switching back and forth. Is that fair?
It is. It's totally fair. And I think that, one of the things that I always struggled with at Icon was truly, truly being able to find the talent at the level that was required to be successful in that single point of contact model. There was a lot of support and we scaled that, quite aggressively. And a lot of that the scalability had to do with the support team behind that model. And it really wasn't the front end people. They weren't brilliant salespeople or anything. I mean, they were good, but they weren't so good that they were the reason that we were scaling. What I realized is that we were scaling Icon because the operations team was so good and they were so efficient and mm-hmm. they created due to their efficiencies, their speed, their accuracy, the time and the ability for my frontline people to do more because they had less and less responsibility. And so I've sort of taken that idea and tried to capitalize on it and in a completely different market space. And it has so far gone really, really well.
Amazing. So what's the sort of size of the business now? How many people have you got and where have you found the most success?
So, I've done this differently. and I have invested in offshore support and teams mm-hmm. and people that work for us full time that are in other countries. And so the offshore team is quite large. It's over 12 people currently, and they're dedicated to our organization. On this side in the US, there's only 5 of us right now.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And we're going to within, I guess, we really got started just about 3 years ago, and, you know, we'll be pushing, close to $2 million in revenue in this third year.
And amazing.
So that's pretty, it's pretty good. I'm hoping it goes a little better, but stays the same.
Are you doing contract, or is it all permanent direct hire, or what's the mix?
We're split 50-50 mm-hmm. right now.
Okay.
Yeah. 50-50, right. Which is actually really kind of fun for me too, because I have primarily myself personally have always been a permanent placement recruiter, but Icon was 80% contract, 20% perm. And I've really enjoyed being back in the perm placement business. I think that it's a wonderful business. I like the contract staffing business too, especially in the tech sector, which we're in. But it is nice to have a balance between the two, because it hasn't forced me to hire specialists. I've been able to get away with people who are good perm placement recruiters, but who've also been able to manage accounts with contract staffing opportunities as well.
It's really interesting, because what I see, especially in the US, is that it's much more segregated between contract and permanent in a lot of companies. And yet, to me, you have to, like, okay, if you're a one-man band, then fine, you're probably going to be doing permanent placement. But if you have aspirations to grow, then, it just makes total sense to do both, to offer some kind of temporary, contract service as well as permanent placements. And I don't know why. And so if someone's only doing contract, why wouldn't they do permanent? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, if someone's only doing permanent, why wouldn't they offer contract? And in Europe here, we see a lot more blended businesses where they do both. So for example, in accounting mm-hmm. or in IT especially, you see they'll have the, they'll provide, or even in marketing, like they'll provide freelance marketers as well as permanent marketers. Why do you think that doesn't seem to be the case in a lot of businesses?
I think that for me, if I was to look at this and look at the, I've been at this almost 24 years now. I think the availability of funding of payroll is only come about in the last 20 years, where it's really truly been affordable to as a individual contributor or as a small business to be able to fund payroll on contract. And so I think that organizations like that really kind of boomed the perm placement business, like the MRI network, that they just didn't have the concept of that until very late in the in the game, and it wasn't really an offering that people thought about. It was certainly available, but it just wasn't well known. And I think that because of that, over the years, it has created sort of these, like you're saying, like two buckets, right? There's just, well, we just do contract staffing, or we just do perm placement. I think that financially it was hard to combine the two. And I think the market for a long time was sort of set up that way. It's just my two cents on that.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. I wonder if also I'm sure is probably the biggest reason. I wonder if there's almost snobbery, but like if someone's a retained executive recruiter, do they sort of regard the temporary staffing side of the business as like not as prestigious or something? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe but the funny thing about that is that you find if you put an interim leadership recruiter up against a perm placement, executive search, every time the revenue and margins are so much better on the interim side than they are in the perm placement world. Like it's not even, it's you can't even compare the two. The typically also what I find in, especially in interim leadership, that the interim recruiter knows far more people and has access and can move so much faster than the permanent placement recruiter. So it is kind of funny, you know, it's a little bit of an unknown, and you might be right. There might be this little bit of, well, I'm a executive search, but what you don't realize is that there's an entire world out there that is absolutely unbelievable. And you know, making a perm placement is great, you know, but having to start over and make another and then make another and then make another, you know, it's not easy. And so if you place five interims that work for 3 years for an organization and you get to build that out, you know, that's probably doing more revenue and potentially more gross profit than you've done in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. People just, it's awareness, I think, more than anything. People need to be aware because there's more separation. There's like the search business and the search guys, and then there's the staffing. And they're seen as like these totally different things when really there's a huge overlap or potentially there could be complementary. So, and people should be aware that if you do want to sell your business, having some kind of recurring revenue component of that business is going to significantly increase the multiple that you can get when you want to exit, because it's a much better investment, isn't it? If someone's going to acquire your business and they can see revenue out into the future that's already on the books versus permanent, which, you know, there's no visibility of permanent revenue after like 2 months, 3 months out.
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously more attractive to them, right?
Oh, intensely. Yeah, you know, it's amazing actually.
Video interviewing has been part of mainstream recruitment for over a decade now. But have you figured it out yet? Video interviewing certainly looks good as part of your recruitment service. It gives you the appearance of being a cutting-edge recruitment business owner on the front line of technology. But is it paying its way? Are you getting more new business, more repeat business because you're using video interviewing? Or is it starting to look more like a financial drain on your recruitment business? Our sponsor and trusted partner, iIntro, has a solution for this. Their video interviewing is just one part of a complete suite of recruitment tools, so you don't need to spend a fortune on yet another tech platform. Everything you need is included in one package. Additionally, they provide training for your recruitment firm to make sure you're using the technology to the best possible effect for your existing clients, as well as how to use it to attract new clients. If you're thinking of investing in video interviewing, don't take another step until you've requested your free demonstration from iIntro. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retain to book your free consultation. See for yourself how to use video interviewing to get a true return on your investment. That's recruitmentcoach.com/retained. You mentioned you're leveraging offshore resources and you're leveraging automation, and that allows your small team in the US of five of you to really perform, you know, at a level of a bigger company, but without the same overheads. Mm-hmm. Could you just elaborate a little bit on how that actually works?
Sure. Yeah. So there's two groups of people in offshore areas, and you know, it takes a little bit of time to set this up, but we do the sourcing piece. So when you say, like, you know, sourcing candidates, building lists of sources, as well as having someone who is on the BD side constantly looking for job postings or openings within our area of expertise that are more than 30 days old. And so every day they are bringing lists of those types of jobs to the SDR side of the business, the BD side of it. And then the sourcing team is building lists of people utilizing different types of sources and Boolean searches to help the recruiters build lists of people. And so we have the the sourcing piece of it. And then there's recruiters, but they're almost like an automation tool, but they're people who are building email campaigns and doing the initial outreach to those lists. And that's happening constantly. So it's kind of a two-step outsourced process where sourcing's being done by one team based on every job that comes in through the door at Inova. And then it gets sent over to another team that's actually, you know, that English is a little stronger, more familiar with, and they build sequences, email campaigns and email sequences that are constantly going out also to make candidate lists. And so then as those candidates respond, that actually goes to the US team, the recruiters in the US. So the American team is the one who picks up the phone and calls those who are showing any sort of interest at all, or in fact even opening emails. They're calling those people, and then so that's happening on a regular basis, and that team is pretty good size. Because it does take, you know, an 8-hour day, there are two sourcers, and one. Technically, there's three because there's one that's working full time on the job order leads, and then there are about right now 15, I guess, that are doing the sequences and building those, because we probably produce candidate lists of several hundred a day that need those email campaigns to go out. So yeah, it's a pretty big job.
So the you've got two or three people who are really just, when you say sourcer, they're like data, that's data driven. So they're doing searches, they're putting lists together, they're finding contact information, then they're feeding that to either the business development team or the recruiting team, who will then be leveraging automation tools to initiate the outreach. And then once you get any kind of sign of interest, then that's being followed up by the American recruiters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Yep. All right. That's awesome.
Yep.
Love it. And I can see how that's so scalable.
Yeah. Because the thing is on the kind of sourcing, on the sourcing side, that's mm-hmm. you know, basically recruited those people through Upwork, you know, freelancers at Upwork. And we have found a lot of talent in Pakistan, and it's been wonderful relationships. And we pull them into the ecosystem. They're on teams mm-hmm. with us. They're engaged with us. You know, we don't just, you know, oh, okay, here, you know, just do this. They're a part of the organization. Like we really bring these people in, and the same thing with the other side. And we're in constant communication with them. And we chose to work with an agency on the email side of it, and the campaigning and the organization. And they do a lot of Crelate. Our Crelate is our ATS. They do a lot of manipulation and management in there also. So as we need, as things start to become busier, or we get, you know, recently we had like 20 positions up for one organization that needed to be taken care of, we scaled up that side of it. And we're able to do that because we're not working with just individuals. We're working with an entire agency that's doing this, you know, full time. So that's worked out really well for us.
Interesting. I'm just curious, like, why you went with Pakistan in particular. Was there any reason? Our team members are, by the way, we used to call them VAs, but now we just call them colleagues, mm-hmm. like, because they are really members of our team. As you say, we've brought them into our, you know, into our business as fully fledged team members. But our coworkers tend to be from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason being just there's no language barrier. Mm-hmm. They're completely fluent in English, which makes it very much easier from an internal communication point of view, but also it means like my executive assistant, Rachel, who also manages this podcast, mm-hmm. I'm very happy for her to go directly to podcast guests, like really senior people, and coordinate and, you know, send emails back and forth. And, you know, and I'm confident for her to do that because I know her English is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, it's, there is no real particular reason. I interviewed many people from the Philippines. Our team that does the sequencing is all in India. But when I chose the first person to do the sourcing side of it, they just happened to be in Pakistan, and he's absolutely wonderful, and his English is good enough for what he's doing for us. And we just feel, and it's just been nice because he has a little bit of a leadership qualities to him, and he's brought some other people to the table who have very strong skills as well. And so they're all working for us now with him. And it's, you know, one of the things that I have always tried to do is, you know, with, because I've outsourced a lot over the years, not just with Icon, even way before that. And I've just tried to find the best people. And I've tried not limited my scope to any one particular area. You know, English is spoken in a lot of countries.
True.
But then it's just by happens. This is where we landed, and it's been worked out great.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you can find someone who is a technically very, you know, good at their job, but also has the leadership qualities that they can then manage other people, mm-hmm. that just makes it so much easier for you because you've got like him being the point guy, and then, you know, managing the other resources for you, then that just saves so much time, and he can train them, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're not having to do everything yourself from scratch.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, it's been really, you know, kind of a blessing and lucky that has happened. But I think too, you know, just I do have like literally probably 20 years of experience in doing, in managing, you know, outsourced, you know, job duties. So it's been a really beneficial piece of, you know, sort of my success, I guess, in the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's it. That's huge. Like we're big believers in it. So it sounds like you're using a combination of you have an agency, mm-hmm. like an RPO firm offshore, mm-hmm. and you also have individuals. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yep. Cool. So the last time we got together, Joel, we at the very end of our conversation, you alluded to the fact that at Icon, the majority of your leads and your candidates, both the client and candidate leads, were generated using inbound marketing. Mm-hmm. But we ran out of time to really get into that.
That's right.
And we got so many people contacting us saying, we want to know more about Joel's marketing, like, because they just heard that and it was like a light bulb going off, but then we didn't have time to get into it. So, what I should tell people is that, by the way, Joel and I recorded a webinar together. I mean, it was a year ago now, but it's still absolutely relevant. So the webinar was called the eight. So I give people the right information. It was called How to Build an Eight-Figure Recruitment Business That Runs Without You. So if you want to watch the recording and download the slides, you can go to recruitmentcoach.com/scale. So recruitmentcoach.com/scale. In that webinar, we share the 9 pillars of a scalable business. And there's a diagram of a flywheel, which shows the 9 pillars. And I know our listeners are probably asking, okay, well, what are the 9 pillars? And so again, go and watch the webinar for a full explanation. But in brief, they are strategy, number one. Number two is internal recruitment. So that's recruiting for your own business. Number three is talent development. In other words, onboarding and being able to train and develop your recruiters. Four is sales management. So how do we get people billing and optimize their performance? Five is client acquisition. So building systems like the ones Joel's describing on both client acquisition, and number six is candidate acquisition. So not left to any one individual's, you know, efforts, but that you have built a machine and you've got systems and processes and automation in place so that the client acquisition machine is just constantly running. It never stops. And same on the candidate acquisition side. Then you've got number seven is marketing management. Number eight is, I think I counted too many, but that's right. Operations management is number eight and business management is number nine. So today I wanted people just to get a little taster session on the marketing piece of the puzzle. So Joel, I know we don't have time to get into a full masterclass here, but could you describe a little bit how you manage marketing in your recruiting businesses in order to generate leads that, you know, amplify everybody's performance?
Yeah. I think that, the use of social media to market and email campaign marketing is essential to scalability. And in order to be able to do these things and do them well, they have to be run by someone else inside your organization. You can outsource this in the early stages, but my experience has always been that, you know, it's always best done by an employee that has the wherewithal and the skills, the truly has the skills to put together a marketing plan for the organization. So it's a little less traditional. You know, I started doing this a long time ago. Email marketing was, you know, kind of the biggest way to attract clients for me, even back in the early 2000s. With the addition of social media, LinkedIn, and these other platforms that allow you to reach a much larger, group of people, what I began to do and what I set out to do and what I'm doing with Inova is the same thing I did with Icon, which is set a marketing calendar in place, and you build out a outreach program utilizing 5 days of the week, and you cut up, you know, the difference between production time, meaning you're building media to go out, you're developing email campaigns, you're developing postings or social media posts. There's production time, and then there is delivery time, and you set a five day calendar for an individual to basically run, you know, Monday through Friday. They are constantly producing content. And it sounds something like, you know, the first thing we would do like on a Monday would be to build all of the new job order campaigns. So as new job orders came in the prior week, that Monday, the first morning was all done, was taking all the new things and getting them out on the internet. And, you know, we could spend hours on how that all works, but, so there's 2 hours there. And then the next thing is, okay, you're going to, you know, building email campaigns for the, every single, you know, for the recruiters that have the jobs that were presented last week. And so they build email campaigns to try to attract new candidates. And these email campaigns, they're just it's a template, but they add a little bit of flair to it, something a little different, or a new little picture that then is sent over to the recruiter who puts it into the system, who sends it out, and, you know, whatever email automation tool they're using, it just, boom, it goes out there. You know, and then after that, we're doing a video, we're building or designing a video about, you know, a win that we had as an organization or an event that we are sponsoring or whatever it is. There was always a chunk of time each day to sort of what I would say self-promote. And you know, we were constantly building media around self-promotion of our organization. And that was really geared for like LinkedIn, the platform LinkedIn. And it went to the other social media areas, but you know, we self-promoted a lot and we self-promoted everything. Like we, you know, it was silly, like really, literally, like we bought new chairs once for the organization and we self-promoted, you know, new chairs. Yeah, you know, it was just stuff like that, you know, and Innova's, you know, not quite doing the new chair thing just yet, but, you know, we're getting to the point to where you'll start to see, you know, just consistently pushing out outreach of the organization. I just felt like it was not only with ICON, but with Innova as well, is that we, you know, you have this goal in mind of to meet everyone in your marketplace, and you'll never meet that goal. But the only way that you can even come close to it is put the effort in to try. So you just have to just constantly be pushing things out, creating new followers and doing that. And again, it takes an internal person to best effectively do this. And this is not an inexpensive thing. I got very lucky with ICON and I hired a new grad out of the University of Oregon who was absolutely brilliant and was able to build this out to what people were responding to in the last podcast was, you know, over 60% of all new revenue came from our internal marketing team.
Did you know that fewer than 1% of recruitment business owners ever achieve an exit? The good news is that it's absolutely achievable if you know how. That know-how and proven track record is exactly what Recruitment Entrepreneur provides. They're the number one investor in recruitment startups and scale-ups globally. James Kahn and his team have done this many times before. In fact, they've backed 45 businesses already, and they're only just getting started. Based in London, they've now launched in the USA and many other countries around the world. They're looking to partner with ambitious recruiters who want to start, scale, and sell their recruitment business. They provide the funding, mentoring, advice, and support you need to become one of the top 1% who successfully exit their recruitment business. To learn more about Recruitment Entrepreneur in the USA or anywhere globally, go to recruitmentcoach.com/VC. That's VC as in venture capital. Book a call with one of their investment directors and be sure to tell them you were referred by Mark Whitby and the Resilient Recruiter podcast. Once again, visit recruitmentcoach.com/VC. So Joel, I get what you're saying. Like, so it's omnichannel. So you're leveraging LinkedIn, email, and probably every other social platform, but those are the two most important ones, mm-hmm. are LinkedIn and email. Mm-hmm. It's multimedia. So you're sending like text-based emails, but you're using imagery. You're creating posts that may be images, but you're also producing videos. And I've seen some of the videos that your team produced and they look amazing. Like they don't look homemade, put it that way. You've done like really a professional job with that. So it's omnichannel, it's multimedia, and you're sharing content. Some of it is about specific jobs. So you're promoting, you know, the new roles that you're recruiting for, but you're also promoting the business in the sense of, you know, new team member starting or a new milestone in the business or a new accomplishment of someone in the team or, you know, celebrating those things and sharing that with your community of clients and candidates. Mm-hmm. And it's in a very well planned, it's in a format that's very well organized. You've got a marketing calendar and you also, and this is important because I think listening to this, people may feel overwhelmed and like, whoa, how could I possibly do all that? But you have a dedicated person and this is what they're doing full time, right?
Yes, so, absolutely, yeah.
And I guess the question is, number one, how big do you need to be before it makes sense to have that dedicated internal marketing person?
Well, it just really depends, doesn't it? Because I can say at ICON, the first hire was the marketing person. First official hire.
You were the first. So there was you were billing yourself, mm-hmm. like to be get the king's things the rolling. But the first full time employee you had was a marketing person.
Yeah,
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, I was a producer, and my team, my partners were producers. So we didn't need producers. We didn't need revenue execution at the time. We needed my idea was I was going to bring someone into the organization that was going to expand our capabilities. You know, they were going to grow our business without us doing it. And it was going to be a stepping stone to starting to hire producers. But we wanted to get as much exposure of about what we were doing as we possibly could. And the only way I saw doing that was hiring somebody full time. And a little secret sauce for marketing was we would celebrate our wins through marketing. So if we landed five new job orders or 10 new job orders, so we made this placement over there, we weren't giving away the farm, right, in the marketing, but we were constantly celebrating it, constantly telling people that we had just done this, that we had just finished this, or we just landed this, you know, size of health system or whatever it might be, constantly little tidbits of our successes also. And that,
absolutely.
And that came in again. It was one person to start, and you know, right now Innova has this outsourced to an agency, but not for long. You know, very soon we will bring this person in. And so, to best answer that question, it really just depends on, you know, the revenue that you have available to you. You know, can you afford this person? This person's going to be either $45,000 a year or $125,000 a year. It just depends on what's available in your area. And if you can afford it, the return is ridiculous if this is done well. I mean, it's just, they basically don't cost anything if this is done well.
Amazing. Yes, absolutely. So I guess the decision as to when to bring that person on depends on, as you say, revenue you have available. So you reckon it's going to cost between $45,000 and $125,000, depending on the level of person. Mm-hmm. Are they a grad, or are they, you know, experienced, or what have you? Or
yeah, and they have to be.
And also where you live, I guess.
Right. They have to be an individual contributor. They have to be a media producer. They have to produce the stuff themselves. They can't, there is no just managing this or you know.
Right,
you
know, right. That's important.
There's a lot of marketing people that are so-called marketing people that can't rub two sticks together when it comes to this stuff. But you really have to find someone who is going to produce for you constantly, and then you build that team out over time, and that's what we did, you know, at Icon, and we will absolutely do that at Innova, as we will build out a small marketing team that's really, you know, when you think about it, they're just an addition to the delivery bucket and the BD bucket. They're just doing things that are more personal. They're more sort of in tune with what's happening within your company, and they're celebrating and showing off sort of what you're capable of and how you're doing it and how much fun you are and how wonderful, you know, the team is and all that stuff.
Absolutely. In fact, I think sometimes owners forget that they actually have three audiences that they need to market to. They've got their clients, they've got the candidates, but they also have their current and future employees as well.
Yeah.
And if you want to grow, then you need to make sure that everyone in your ecosystem, including your competitors, are aware of, you know, who you are, what you do, and the fact that you're really successful at what you do. And it's also it's a talent attraction tool, because if you're interviewing someone, they could be a grad, they could be experienced, and they're interviewing with, you know, five recruitment agencies, but you have this marketing machine set up that is going to, you know, enable them to perform better, then that's, and because most recruiting firms do not have that.
Yeah.
What you're describing is quite unusual. And unless you're a massive company like, you know, Adecco or Robert Half or whatever, I'm sure they have big marketing departments,
sure.
But for small firms, most of them don't have that. And so that's a huge draw to make people want to choose Innova instead of another recruiter?
Yeah, I think that brand awareness, you know, I attribute it to this model I learned in university called TOMA, you know, top of mind awareness. And how do you create top of mind awareness in today's environment? I mean, it is so tough to have brand recognition, right? And because we are, the attention spans, especially in Western culture, is just zero. So you have to just constantly be promoting yourself, because nobody else is going to do it. And if you do it well, I mean, you think about this for a second. If you're a job seeker and you're looking at companies, and you click on an About Us on a website, and you see a group of people having fun, versus an organization where you click About Us and it's just an explanation of who they are, mentally you're like, well, I want to go work with these people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people just don't seem to get that, you know, that you're attracting a person, you know, not a robot. And so,
right.
And it's in all three of those buckets, like you mentioned before, they all need to see that. And it's really important. And it may be painful initially to get this started. It may be difficult, but it's a difference maker.
100%. And obviously, you know, we can help people to launch that journey a lot faster and easier than trying to figure it out from scratch, because you've done it multiple times. I've been a student of marketing for almost my whole life. It's a kind of topic I'm really passionate about. Joel, I want to briefly touch on the economy, because I'm seeing, well, before I do that, because I know you have strong views on this and so do I, and want to talk about people's mindset and around this, but also some practical aspects to being resilient, having a sustainable business that can weather storms that may be ahead. Before we do that, just if you're interested in joining me and Joel and this mastermind group of like-minded, hugely ambitious and smart recruiting firm owners who are scaling, then book a strategy call with me. The link to do that is recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. Is that I'm going to help you to achieve a breakthrough in your business. So it's recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. And we can just explore. It's not, I do not try and close you. I'm not going to apply any sales tactics. I'm going to find out about your business and what your goals are, what your challenges are. And if I believe that you are a fit for us and that we can help you, and if you are also interested in learning more, then I can tell you about our coaching program. But either way, you're going to leave that call feeling energized and with a clear plan for taking your business forward. So Joel, this, I'm seeing some of my competitors like really go hard on this, you know, recession piece, and they're really playing on that. And I really don't like it. It's like sort of fear mongering. And the messaging seems to be like, hey, like, you know, the economy is going to tank, and unless you join our coaching program, like, we know what's going on and we know how to, you know, if you don't join us, then you're going to be screwed. That's kind of message. I just hate that. Mm-hmm. And it's also sort of condescending, like you don't know what you're doing, but we know, like, we've got this. And if you join us, then you'll be safe. But if you're on your own, then good luck. Mm-hmm. That's kind of I just really dislike this. But nevertheless, I don't think people should bury their head in the sand and just pretend everything is going to be fine, because the economy is cyclical and it does have ups and downs. What is your mindset around this topic?
I think that the you know, we are going to see and are seeing a slowdown globally, and you know, the all these economies are different, but they're all affected by kind of the same things, you know. So without going into specifics about where trouble areas are and all this stuff, my mindset is that I will outwork it. And I don't really have to outsmart it so much, but I try to do that too, but I'll outwork it. And what that means to me and my team is that we will diversify our portfolio. We will go, our recruiting skill is our recruiting skill. We're very, very good at this. We have a machine basically built, and it doesn't really matter that much what you give us. We can probably fill it. But we're not going to get so far away from what our core business is, but we've already begun to start looking in other buckets within these organizations and areas in the economy that are doing better than others, and just sort of hedge our bets a little by getting involved with organizations like that are going to continue to hire people, and we can sort of learn the types of people that they need, and not go so crazy out. We're in the tech sector, but we do work with a lot of accounting and finance people within the tech sector and in the healthcare industry. Our healthcare information management thing kind of spills over into revenue cycle, and so we'll keep a really close eye on that, and we'll focus a little bit more on those areas as things start to shift. We all have tried to forget about 2008, which was a dramatic axe to the economy, right? It just came in one night and boom, the stock market crashed, and a global recession was set into motion in a matter of days. We're not going to see that. Some of us in this industry won't feel this at all, I think. Just depends on where you're at, but you have to outwork it. The people, what won't change is the number of jobs that are needed. It might not be so outrageous like it was in 2019 that there just really isn't enough people on Earth to fill the jobs that was wild. But we'll see a shrinking into a little bit more of a realistic world of, because I do think that some of these continued moves, especially by the American government, will continue to keep inflation around longer than it necessarily should be. But the reality is that you can either adopt this mindset of, oh my gosh, the sky is falling, we're going to go into a recession, I'm going to let all my people go, and I'm just going to make a placement a month to stay alive, and, or you can get out there even more, put more time into this, and discover the places that, and the organizations that do need you. And maybe for a short period of time, you have to reduce prices a little bit, so what? There's good years and bad years, there's good times and bad times. It all depends on what you're going to do with it and how you're going to manage it. And you don't have to be like, nothing's happening, because that's just dumb. But at the same time, stay in tune with what the market's doing and try to outwork it, because you can. In 2008, I shrunk the company I was working at by 45% because it just crashed. But then subsequently grew the organization's revenue. So, and it was because we started, we had a group of people who were really, really good producers, and we said, well, you're going to have to get out of your niche a little bit, and you're going to have to go into these areas, and you're going to have to do some $15,000 fees, and you're going to have to do this stuff to what your companies need. Partner with them, talk to them, how can you be of service to them? Okay, if their revenue is reduced by 25% due to a recession, then you be willing to reduce your fees by the same percentage for a time being, right? And write it up, and if they'll still use you, because they still need the people in order to be able to produce. So it's just I haven't, in my lifetime, haven't seen something so catastrophic happen to the economy that we went out of business.
Exactly. I think, Joel, so many good insights there. The point being, like, how you can't control the economy. All you can control is your own mindset, strategy, decisions, and actions, right? Is your own behaviors and how you respond to the situation. So, like, are you going to withdraw into yourself and think, woe is me? Or are you going to go on the attack, on the offensive, and take more action, outwork it, as you say? Like, you know, if you have too few clients, it's a bit like having a stool, you know, with three legs. If you knock one, you know, one of those legs off, it's going to probably collapse. If you have more legs into your stool, your table, whatever your analogy, then you've got a much stronger platform to build on. So that applies to your candidate generation. If you're only using like LinkedIn and only sending in mails, you know, well, guess what? That's not robust enough. You need to deploy more strategies to generate candidates. If you only have, you know, one source of clients, or too few clients, or too much of your revenue is being generated by, you know, a handful of producers, you know, then these are all vulnerabilities, right?
So
how can you make your business more, more robust, more resilient?
It's just like not having contract staffing capabilities in your organization. And maybe you hate contract staffing, but what it's used more during a recession than ever. So it just depends, you know, and I, again, it's that mindset of, you know, fight or flight, right? You know, I always choose to fight. So
absolutely. That makes two of us. Yeah. Joel, I know you need to jump onto a client call, so I'll let you go. That was fun.
Thanks for
coming back on the show.
Absolutely.
And I'll see you at the next Apex meeting. Right. So take care.
Mark. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. If you've enjoyed the show, the best way you can show your support is to click that subscribe button. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.